We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello everybody, welcome to another edition of this wonderful podcast. I tell you what, it's nearly 3 years we've been doing this. Coming up to 3 years. We'll be making an announcement about what we're going to be doing to celebrate that fact later on. But before we begin, we have to do the things that we do. And the way that we keep the lights on here is that we have a wonderful sponsor, and that sponsor is Save Our Souls Clothing. Those wonderful boys, Mark and Stacey, supporting our wonderful podcast. And we've got merch, membrane tees and hoodies. If you go to their website, sosclothing.co.uk/membrane, use the exclusive listener code membrane, that's one word, you'll get 15% off, not just of our wonderful hoodies and tees, but across the store. So what's not to love about that? How generous is that, those wonderful lads? So yeah, so go to sosclothing.co.uk/membrane, use the exclusive listener code membrane, it's one word, you'll get 50% discount, not just off of our hoodies and tees, but off of the entire store. So there you go. They've also got another website coming up. I think it goes live very soon. It's called buythemerch.com, I think. That's called Buy the Merch. But they're going to be doing merch for bands, podcasts, comedians, all sorts. It's all going to be going through this one website. So that's coming up. But for now, you go to sosclothing.co.uk/membrane. Use the promo code membrane. You get 50% off the entire store. What is not to love? Also, we have limited edition Insane in the Membrane coffee beans, a roast made to our taste by Wogan Coffee in Bristol. Go to wogancoffee.com and use the exclusive membrane listener promo code membrane for 10% off podcast packs. Now, if you get these, you do me a favour, take a photo and tweet them to me or Facebook them to me or do what you want to do so I can see them. I want to see what it looks like. If you do that for us, that'd be great. Put your little head in it as well so we can see who you are. That'd be fantastic. So do that for us. So go to wogancoffee.com, use the exclusive membrane listener code membrane for 10% off podcast packs. Smashing. So there we are. That's the admin done. I hope you lot are well. I've been all right, actually. I've had some gigs are coming back fast and furious. I was away on tour supporting Clinton Baptiste the other week. Last week, brilliant, a really good time. Clint Baptiste from Phoenix Nights, the medium. Alex Lowe, who is the man behind Clint Baptiste, was a former guest on this very podcast. Would have been back when we started it, so it's one of the earlier ones. It was a great chat with a lovely man. He's so lovely. We have such a laugh. He's a really top dude. And Alex Winter, the tour manager as well, had a great time. So we had a nice couple of 4 days away. It was really nice. And so the people of Darwin and the people of, where were we, Halifax. And then the beautiful people of Salford, the Lowry. Honestly, The audiences were fantastic. People were really glad to be back out and having a laugh. It's so cool. So that's really nice. And then this weekend, I shall be at Up the Creek, my comedy spiritual home. I'm headlining the Creek Friday and Saturday, both nights. So if you're around, come down. Come and see old Wilson in his natural habitat. And that is Up the Creek in Greenwich in South London. Honestly, every time I go there, because that's where I started. I was a barman behind the bar there. That's where I started. And so it's good, always good to be back in the Creek. So if you're around, come see old Wilson. That's this Friday and Saturday night. Come see me. Come on. You know you want to. I don't even know what the dates are. The dates are just this. Anyway, yeah, you'll find me. Just come and find me. So anyway, let's get on with it, shall we? Let's get to our guest. Now, our guest this week is the brilliant comedian Travis J. And he's just done, he just supported Dave Chappelle at the Backyard in East London there. And again, the Backyard, one of the finest clubs going. That's where I cut my teeth as well. When I started out, I was doing the Comedy Cafe, the Backyard, man alive. Anyway, it's not about me, it's all about the guest. And this guest is absolutely first class. Travis J, we really had a good chat, really got stuck in. He's a really great guy. And you'll hear that in the episode. Sometimes in these, when I'm having the conversations, I forget that I'm actually recording something and I'm just having a chat, you know. And we talked about all manner of things, you know. We talked about the controversy surrounding what Chappelle's been saying and things like that. And it was a really good chat. It was a really good chat, and you'll hear that coming up. This is ahead of Travis's show, which is going to be at London's Bloomsbury Theatre on November 12th. Link to that will be in the show notes to this, so you can get your tickets for that. That will, I know, I urge you to get them quickly because it's going to sell out. He's a brilliant comedian, so do that. That's one night only, November 12th. Link in the show notes. So do that. So let's get on with it. Coming up in a bit is Travis J.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
You can also see this week's interview on our YouTube channel. Click the link in the episode description.
A podcast from producer paul.co.uk.
Insane in the membrane.
I'm going to get straight to it. I was just checking you out and seeing your things and that. Working with Dave Chappelle must have been incredible.
Oh, bro. Phenomenal experience, man.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was a weird experience because it's like in my head, he's my favorite comedian of all time, you know, and you know, a lot of people's, you know, same view in the same way. So it's like you've got him in this godlike status, do you know what I mean? But then you kind of see him in real life, and it's like what it does for you, you see that he's actually a human, he's actually a man. Yeah. He still gets nervous before shows, and
oh, really?
You know, he still have you, his friends, his go-to friends afterwards, where he's like, yo, how was that? You know, what did you think? Just for that extra bit of personal validation, I was like, bloody hell. Do you know what I mean? There's the man behind all of this. And, you know, what I took from that was like, you know, he is still a human. So any one of us could essentially achieve this if we dedicate our time to the craft in the way he has.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think that did a lot for my view of stand-up and my career and, you know, where I can see things getting to. But watching him work, man, it was just a masterclass.
Legend. Something else, isn't it? When you see someone like that just...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, there's the backlash as well from all the things that he said.
Yeah.
This is the thing. When I was, because I've seen him, I was lucky enough to see him at Leicester Square Theatre before all the COVID.
Yeah, that last run.
Yeah.
I remember just sat there. I was like second from the front, and I'm just to the point. Sometimes I forgot to laugh because I'm just like,
you just admire it.
Yeah.
You just think, genius. How did you think of that?
That's it. And I remember like I've had him on like my headphones and other comics that I admire, like Norm Macdonald and all that. Just going around and like listening to them, trying to just not about the comedy, but it's about their worldview, how they view things.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And then I saw all the backlash that was coming on. I haven't seen the latest special yet, but
okay.
But then I've seen what people have been saying, and I'm like, nah, I'm sure that's not right. From what I gather, from what he said before,
he's not
transphobic at all, man.
It's largely from that show as well.
Right.
The closer is a lot from that show, like the story about Daphne and stuff like that. You remember who did it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a thing is for me, the worst reviews and stuff I personally hate are the ones that say, I haven't watched it, but, you know, when it starts like that, I think, piss off. I don't even care at that point. Do you know what I mean? If you want to comment on something, know what you're talking about. Because, you know, credit to Dave, whether you agree or disagree, he does know what he's talking about, by and large, in most cases. You know what I mean? If you want to fact check, there probably are some holes you can poke through, like as with anyone, but he, by and large, is a well-read, researched man. So I think if you are going to take something to him, also do the same research.
This is it, man. This is exactly it. And, you know, he tells the story of Daphne, and you're like, you know, it's such a tragic story.
Mm.
She was basically... Yeah. They were basically hounded, and then they felt they just couldn't be here anymore. And that, and you're like, you've not these people that are making these comments. Going, you haven't listened to a fucking thing that they've said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like you say, he's a well-read man. He's not just blurting stuff out like the rest of us. He's actually done his research. He knows what he's talking about. He isn't transphobic at all.
Yeah.
And there should be, but you should be able to make fun of everybody. It's not necessarily punching down, but. You should be able to joke about stuff.
And the thing is, it's like, you know, whilst I'm always on the side of the comedian in a lot of these situations, even if a comedian has views I disagree with heavily, you know, I'm always kind of like, you know, let the comedian be the comedian. Yeah. But I'm also along the side of, but you can't expect to be without the consequences that come with playing that position.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because people are going to feel how they feel.
Of course they are.
Especially if it's a lived experience, you know, for you versus someone who isn't. So it's like, I liken it to, if, say, a white comic was doing a lot of material about the black community's experience of racism, it's like, you know, it could be 85% correct, but that 15%, I'm going to feel like, well, why did he allow himself to make this mistake on our behalf? Do you see what I mean?
So yeah.
It's a bit triggering. So I do have that sympathy for the other side of the response, but at the same time,
yeah.
You know what I mean? I pick my side with as far as the comedian in the equation. I'm like, we got to be able to feel free enough to be ourselves because I feel like the watered down safe stuff, like you can almost tell when a comic is jostling on the, trying to be on the right side of history with the material and it just turns into a TED talk. It's like, bro, you just pointed out basic human rights.
Oh man, this is a conversation I've had with loads of people, like newer comics that are coming through, and they've been asking advice and things like that. And I don't really—I mean, I'm still working it out. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But you know, I want to be this kind of comedian, or that kind of comedian. You go, look, you just talk, and whatever comes out. That's the comedian you're going to be. That's who you are. And you'll probably evolve. You'll start off this way and you'll become that. Yeah. The audience will work out what you are. They're going to work you out. You know, it's like I used to worry. I'm like, oh, if I say that, do I sound racist? Do I sound homophobic? Do I sound this? Do I sound that? And I'm like, well, no, because I'm not those things. So that's not going to come out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
It's an interesting one because it's like, it really is a hard thing to advise young comics when they ask for that stuff like that because it really is a case of find your voice.
Yeah.
Wait until your voice matures. You won't know what it is until it finally happens. And there's no going back after it happens. So it's like, for me, I probably really got to know the first stage of my own voice about 5 years in. You know, I'm now like in my 12th year. And it's like the last year, I feel like I've unlocked a new part of things. Do you see what I mean? As I've got older, life experiences, you know, it just changes over time. There's just no formula.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It just evolves. And I think it's changed me as a person.
Yeah.
Being a comic, I'm more confident than I used to be.
Yeah.
I'm more confident in my opinions. You know, I know I'm like, you know, like we were just saying, you know, I have just nothing but peace and love for everybody on all sides, even the fucking idiots that are kicking off, like the QAnon and the flat earthers. I'm like, oh,
it's late, Britain.
Listen. Yeah, you're like, come on.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, that's where you're going with that, and I respect that. That's up to you, yeah. But you know,
yeah.
I just want everyone to get along. You know,
and you know what it is? That's really what's like really driving a lot of stuff I'm about these days. So you know, I have like a lot of conversations sometimes, and it drifts into like racial discussions and stuff like that. Mm. And I've had some conversations with dudes who would tell you, "Look, I'm racist and I don't care." Do you know what I mean? And it's like, sometimes, you know, the conversation might strike up and I'm like, right, I've got time today. Let's have some dialogue, you know? And, you know, it starts out a bit, you know, leery on the timeline. And then sometimes, just, you know, you get a request. It's like, can we just talk in the DMs just privately?
Yeah.
And I've had one of these conversations and it ended with this dude messaging me and just saying, you know what? This conversation's really opened my eyes. It's like, he goes, I'm going to delete this page. Because it was like one of those fake pages, you know, like recently created Twitter profile. He goes, I'm going to delete this page because it's like, now I just feel like a piece of shit. He goes, I apologize. He goes, I'm going to go and really come back and change my energy. And I was like, I did not see this coming.
Nah.
Wow. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just feel like we're in a space where I think honest dialogue is the best way out of this mess that we've created.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's how you do it. Like you say, talking to each other, understanding each other, and then working it out.
Yeah.
Rather than just piling on and going, this piece of shit, let's get him.
Yeah.
You're like, hang on a minute, let's not do that, because then you're becoming the fucking monster.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and the other thing is as well, I was with someone the other night, and my mate's over from Spain, and I met his mate, and his mate's from Texas. Mm. And so we were having this chat, and then the guy's wife turned up.
Okay.
And then we were talking, and you know, she's a woman, a person of colour, and then we were talking, and then halfway through I was like, you must get fucking sick and tired of talking about race.
Mm.
Because I don't get that. You must get fed up with it as well.
Yeah.
You know, like every kid always goes to that, and you must, because no one, I can have a whole evening, and at no point has someone...
Is it going to come up?
It's never come up. But as soon as there's a black person there or someone from somewhere else, everyone's like, the race thing comes up, and you must get to a point where you go, I just want to have a drink. I don't want to change the world tonight.
I don't want to change the world tonight. Fucking hell. Listen, and it's sometimes that awkward moment where it might come up organically, and then it's almost like people just turn to you like, all right, you're going to be a spokesperson for discussions for everybody. It's like, bro, it's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
And it's funny sometimes when you get like, say, comedy reviews, when it's like you speak about something and, you know, race comes in and it's like, oh, you know, banging the racial drum again. I'm like, wait a minute. I cannot really talk about my lived experience truthfully without this at some point coming up.
Yeah.
Because, you know what I mean? It has coloured how I've experienced a lot of things in my life.
Yeah.
So when I look at those things, I think this is a very limited view on material and content in general. So I think... it does play a role in a lot of ways that people would feel like, I can't imagine how that would be.
Mm. I see. It's funny. Like when I talk about that, I go like, no one brings race up with me.
Yeah.
That's because of this has come up loads. That's because the system is fucking racist.
Yeah.
I've benefited from that unwittingly.
Yeah.
But you kind of go, you know, like I've said this a few times ago, because when I get into this conversation with other people said that, I've gone, like, the system's racist. It's fucked. They go, what do you mean? They can't say that. I went, how many photos are there of black families stood outside the gates of the stately home that was owned by their ancestors? There's none. They don't have... That's what I'm talking about.
How many
about.
Black people do you see on Antique Roadshow? Fucking
yeah,
none.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, this has been in my family for 200 years.
200 years, all right, mate.
Yeah. Well, my family, they all got killed 200 years ago. So you could have that fucking pop.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, mate.
And that's the difference, isn't it? And that's why, that's what we need to talk about. And that's
what's funny is that, like, say, terms that can spark crazy debates, like white privilege.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of that stuff was really misconstrued, because I feel like white privilege felt like an attack.
Mm.
On white people today. And I was looking at it and I'm like, this has nothing to do with anybody who is alive today when that term is mentioned. Do you know what I mean? It goes straight to systemic, and it's what took place in history to shape today's society. So to point it out and say, oh, white privilege, I can imagine somebody who's grown up, you know, white person, been under the poverty line most of their life, really struggled, hearing that and thinking, what are you talking about? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I think more conversations should just to clarify points rather than buzzwords leading the dialogue all the time.
Yeah, because the word privilege, like you say, will get misconstrued.
Yeah.
I know that because I did it when I first heard that phrase. I'm like, what? Yeah. What are you talking about? I didn't have a quid to get the bus to college. What's this bullshit?
Yeah.
And then, you go, you got to break it down and like you say, have the dialogue. And
yeah.
Oh, man. But that, you know, like you say, because that's, you know, knowing that growing up, that's going to mess with your mental health. Do you know what I mean? Because you know the system's stacked against you as soon as you're born.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because you start looking at like conversations that you have, you know, because your dad is always going to give you the advice that, you know, your mum doesn't, you know, if you get into a fight at school, your mum's going to coddle you, your dad's going to be like, all right, mate, look, let's start seeing what you can do. You know, it's a different approach to everything. And my dad, you know, told me pretty early in my teens, you know, advice about dealing with police. It's like, don't always expect fairness when you're dealing with the police. You know, I'm not trying to have you out here hating them or anything like that, but I've got to make you aware of the legitimate possibilities, you know? So be aware of yourself when you're getting drunk and you're out of your mates. Do you know what I mean? Don't leave yourself legless. Like, this is the type of advice that I was always aware of. So, you know, I'd be out in my late teens and I'm early 20s, I'm going out. I've always made sure that no matter where I'm drinking, I get to a point where I'm like, okay, if I need to protect myself, do I still have the faculties to do that right now with my current state? And now I'm on the water.
Wow.
In the middle of having a great night.
Yeah.
These are thoughts. Yeah. You see what I mean? So it's like you do kind of, it stays in the background of your existence. And it can shape a, you know, a victim mentality sometimes because you start to feel like, okay, I've constantly got an excuse for certain things. And that's where it goes too far,
in my
opinion, where it's like, okay, you can't let this thing rule your life and kind of arm you with an excuse as to why your life didn't turn out the way you wanted. Mm. But at the same time, the lay of the land is the lay of the land. So, yeah, it's quite fascinating.
Well, it's the same with, I've read a thing the other day. Someone put a checklist up of when women go out, when men go out. So it was all like, right, pepper spray, this, that, make sure I've texted my friends, make sure keys in between my fingers. I've got this, that, make sure people know where I am, blah, 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 blah. And then when it said what the boys have to check, he says, like, money, phone, keys.
Mate.
And you go, right, so that's what we need to talk about.
Yeah.
When we go, it's not all men. Yeah, but it's enough men for that to be a problem.
Male privilege wasn't, I'll be brutally honest and say, I didn't really acknowledge or really pay attention to male privilege until having a daughter. You know, my daughter, you know, and I know a lot of people say, oh, why do men always have to wait until they have a daughter before they start caring about these things? But it's like, that's just my truth, you know? And I've always looked at it like, you know, if you touch my mom or my sister, I'm coming after you. But I wasn't just genuinely thinking about the female experience. And, you know, my little girl was born. And I remember seeing a video online of this this girl. She was walking and she'd filmed herself. And it was like, she filmed how many men catcalled her, how many men approached her to speak and just to generally make conversation and just, oh, smile, darling. Da, 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 da. And I was like, even in my finest hour of women's attention, it's never been this bad. And I just was like, that must be quite scary.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, bloody hell.
It's all the time. I saw it every single time I'm on public transport. I see something.
Yeah.
I see a guy looking too long on the escalators at women. I see a guy, there was the other night I was on the tube and there were two young girls sitting next to me. Yeah, just chatting away, minding our own business. This guy gets on and sits opposite them.
Yeah.
And he's just doing all he can to just get their attention.
Yeah.
And you're just going, mate. And it's all the time and it's relentless.
Mm-hmm.
Yet for some reason, there's a reluctance to have a talk with. We have to talk to young men.
That's right.
Young boys at a very young age go, listen,
you're
going to have certain urges. You're going to have certain feelings.
Yeah.
This is how you react to those feelings and urges.
It's true. It's true. And I think it's a weird one because like I didn't even know that, you know, some women send pictures of the person they're going to go out on a date with to their friend just in case that's just sort of a face to phone the police and report. Jeez. I'm like, I've never had to do that on a date.
No, never.
It's very simple thoughts and demands. But and you look at, say, for example, the recent situation with Sarah Everard and the police, and it's like that is a very scary time now for women.
Yeah.
When police, you know.
Yes.
are the ones who you would phone in those situations.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, it's like, you know, I'm one of these people that, you know, I have a different view on things. Like, for me, I don't look at violence as necessarily a bad thing. If it's controlled. I've been boxing for like over 10 years. Right. So that's my philosophy, is that violence is not the enemy as long as it's controlled. Mm. So I do feel like there needs to be some type of legal loophole that allows women to be either armed or have some type of legit threat of violence to be able to counter these moments. Because whilst, you know, you say, oh, you know, not all men are this and that, but the ones that are, they don't listen to these conversations.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? They are they're just out there.
Yes.
There's no class where rapists went and suddenly he's like, oh, this is who I'm going to be. They just are in their world and that's who they are. Yes. So I'm like, there's nothing I can advise a woman to do besides being able to defend herself should this guy show up. That's just my approach on things. So I don't know, man. I don't know.
But that's it. And that's why we need to talk to kids at a young age.
Yeah.
And that's where we do it. And then you'll be able to see signs. You will be able to see signs, like the kid running around pulling people's hair.
Yeah.
Just even if it's not, just have a word and go, listen, don't fucking do that. You got to chill out a little bit.
Yeah,
Just in case. Because it's so extreme, the other end. Like that, I think about that Sarah Everard story at least once a day.
Yeah.
And every day I feel genuine sadness at what she must have gone through.
Same. Yeah. And it's like, it's tough because it's like, you know, in the black community, we've had our experiences with the police, you know, and it's sad and it's a little bit frustrating because there's times when things are mentioned and it's almost like the response is very much, you know, oh, you know, if you've got nothing to hide, you know, the police should be da da da. And so I'm thinking, all right, look, we're basically pointing out there is an issue with how these guys operate. You know, and this has happened, and I'm glad the conversation has got to this space where people are now looking, thinking, no, there is a fucking issue. Do you know what I mean? Because they're systemically, the police as a whole, you know, unit, so fucked up.
Yeah.
And it has been for a while.
And it's funny because I know a couple of people that are in the force.
Yeah.
And they're dudes, like they're really cool dudes. And but they're like, I don't know what to do. Like, you know, they join the force because they want to make a difference and they want to do something, but because of all the bullshit, the system, and all the bureaucracy and all the other bollocks, they get to a point where, like, I don't know what to do. You know, and the whole thing needs a big shake up because it's fucking up people, it's fucking up the public, it's fucking up the good policemen that are in there, and there are one or two, but it's just. The thing is, because the whole system is corrupt, like corrupt from the top down.
That's when it's the problem.
Yeah, because everyone's making money off this, and they're too busy worrying about getting their little cut of the pie. So they don't really give a shit about any of us.
That's right.
We're just collateral damage.
And that's the thing where it's like, you know, when I look at race, for example, racism, I'm like, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's literally the same thing. Like this, it's a game of FIFA. And whoever has the control pads is like, I need this conflict to keep going.
Yes.
Because I'm over here doing the real shit. So that's why it's like, I look at stuff like racism, I'm like, if we really put this down for 1 second and looked at each other, and we were just like, we could realize, yo, wait a minute, this could actually work. This could actually be a good situation.
Yeah.
Then we'd actually finally have to address the bigger issue.
Yeah.
And that's the powers that be don't want that shit to happen.
No, they don't want us. They don't want us to reveal behind the curtain.
Oh, man.
They like us, so we've got all these little skirmishes going on amongst ourselves.
Yeah.
And in the meantime,
it's like when you ask somebody who's like really extreme in their views to explain, why do you hate this group of people? It's always bullshit. Always.
Yeah. I've said this before and I say this in my set. Yeah. It's because they didn't get brought up with decent music. I'm telling you, play decent music from an early age. Because I grew up with some people and now they got some questionable views.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's because you didn't have Stevie Wonder in your life when you were a kid. You didn't have George Michael. You didn't have, you know, didn't have Dolly Parton, or you didn't have people from elsewhere pouring into your head, telling you about what it was like to be black, what it was like from being a different country, different ethnicities, being gay, being bisexual. All these things came from music. And I know for a fact, these people with these questionable views that I grew up with, they never liked music. They just, yeah. It's a music thing.
I'm going to ask, yeah, that's my new question from now on. The minute I suspect that I'm dealing with someone like that, what did you listen to growing up?
What was the first album you bought? If you get that, and they turn around and say some shit. Or they go, you go, so what sort of music you like? And they go, just a bit of anything, really.
Get him out.
You're a racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic.
Oh, mate.
But so this is the thing. So growing up with that in mind, it does, of course it affects you. It affects your mental health and things like that. And have you seem pretty level-headed and cool. Like you've got a good understanding of the world.
Yeah.
You know, and then now you've got a child as well.
Yeah, I've got two kids. Right. I've got a daughter, she's 10, and my son is 3.
Yeah.
My daughter from a previous relationship. So, you know, me and my son's mum, we're together now.
Right.
So it's funny because I never really looked forward to what my kids' experiences would be. You know, I never really looked to the future as to where this is all going to end up when it was just me. But now it's like, I look at the world that my kids are going to grow into. And it's like, it's like you get torn between some choices where it's like you raise your kids to the world you'd like to have to exist.
Yes.
Or the world that we actually have right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm torn because it's like, I can't be on this page with you and out there, because then you're setting up for a car crash.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm constantly now being very real with my kids, you know, and it's that equivalent conversation that my dad had with me, where I'm like, I would feel like I cheated you if I didn't give you that. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, on one hand, it's like, oh, but, you know, you could say, oh, you're perpetuating, you're keeping it going. But it's like, I can't leave my kids blindsided. All I can do is raise them to be good people, but also be aware of certain things, you know, so that way if the situation ever happens, you know what to do and how to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And that's my job as a parent, as far as I can see.
Yeah. I'll tell you what will happen as well, because mine are older now. Mine are 29 and 24.
Yeah.
And I was so worried about them. I'm like, oh man, have I been a good dad? Do they know enough? Are they going to be all right? Are they prepared? Yeah. But you don't realize they're the same as you. So they were growing up dealing with the parent, the bullshit of the parents.
That's right.
And the bullshit of the outside world, figuring it out, working it out, getting their own opinions on things. And then I was out one day, I was around my youngest son's, where I was around his cousins having a bit of dinner, and he was there. And I just heard him talking to his mate, and he just went, well, yeah, the thing is with my dad, he goes, he just needs a little bit of looking after now and again. And I suddenly went, you've got it. He understands the world. I see these comments on Brexit. I've seen my eldest son, the things they say and what they're doing. Mm. I'm like, oh, yeah, you figured it out. You're fine.
Yeah.
And that's the same with your daughters. They will figure it out as well.
You just got
to be there. You're like, it's like you're guiding like the tennis ball down a plank of wood. Just make sure it doesn't come off.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally. And it's like, you just want to make sure you haven't done anything to leave a scar on them. Do you know what I mean? Because I've experienced therapy for the first time this year.
Yeah, right.
And it's funny because it goes straight back to your childhood.
Every time.
You start to see everything as like the seed when it started. So now with my own parenting, I'm like, what seeds have I planted? Or since I'm planning, do you know what I mean? So now I'm trying to like micromanage things I say. Like my son, right? He's 3 years old, and he had a situation in nursery, and he said this boy pushed him. And I was like, my instant reactions was, all right, let's go in the gym and let's start to teach you how to defend yourself.
Yeah.
And I was like, this isn't the best thing to teach a 3-year-old. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh. I had to just be like, well, make sure that you tell the teacher that next time it happens again. And it's like, I'm going against what I know what I want to say. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't want you to process violence as a resolution so young in your early state in your life. So, I mean, it's not self-defense to a 3-year-old. It's just, look what I can do now.
Yeah, Dad said I can punch you in the mouth.
That's what I mean.
Mind you, saying that, my eldest, when they were at school, and there was a kid picking on him all the time.
Yeah.
And I just said to him, look, next time he does it, just fucking lamp him.
Yeah.
And he did. And he did. And luckily, he got away with it because the kid was a bully. He was bullying loads of people.
Yeah.
But then that doesn't help the kid, because the kid's probably getting some shit at home. There's a reason why he's getting bullied. And I've learnt that now. I wish I'd known that then. This is in the 90s, so I was different.
Yeah. But That's same
thing. Yeah, therapy.
But the thing is, though, it's like I'm definitely giving it a free strike process. So it's so if I keep hearing this, then we're getting in the gym. We're not having that.
you get three turns at this.
Yeah.
And after that, it's got to go old school.
It's chaos, mate.
You get medieval on your ass. you're doing therapy now.
Yeah. So not as regular as when I first started, but it was very eye-opening, And it's like, because I think, sometimes, I used to look at life as if life was just a journey. We're in a vehicle and we just go through all the shit, the good stuff, the bad stuff. But now my philosophy has changed a bit, because now I kind of realize that we actually carry every single thing that we've experienced in our lives. So I'm like, if we're carrying all this stuff and we don't put it down, we could easily, along the way, and not realize it, become a bit toxic.
Yes.
You see what I mean? So one of the things I've faced and been dealing with, I feel like I've kind of overcome it, is the whole kind of, I really leaned into composure, right? Mm-hmm. I was very much like, nothing bothers me, nothing gets to me. I'm pretty much cerebral in all areas of my life.
Yeah.
So it's like, I probably created this mechanism to protect myself. In entertainment, there's a lot of rejection.
Oh, God, yeah.
And it's like, I don't want to allow myself to feel insecure in a relationship to distract me from my craft. So it's like you bulletproof yourself. And in doing so, it's like you just shut out being able to feel anything.
Yeah.
And it's like I felt myself kind of get into that place. And it's like I never acknowledged it as a problem. But in the conversations about my feelings and all this type of stuff, I'm like, shit, I actually do keep everything down to a minimum reaction. And, my co-host who I work with on my podcast, KG, he always says to me, he's like, bro, he goes, you are literally the most cerebral person I knew. It's like, we've podded for 2 years together, but it's like, I'm only now getting to know you. You see what I mean? It's like, I feel like you've opened up. And it's crazy. Even my girlfriend, she's so appreciative of the new version of me, because she's like, I can connect on a much deeper level.
But until then, you were kind of just keeping everyone.
Yeah, it's like, arm's length for a little bit. Like if you backstab me, I'll be fine. I'll be able to continue. But it's like it's all kind of fair based living, and I'm like, I had to drop that stuff, man.
You sound like Producer Paul. Producer Paul is sometimes I'm like, are you all right? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. Because I can't gauge what he's feeling. But even he admits, he shuts it all out.
Yeah.
He does tolerate some absolute shit from me. I'm so unorganised. But he's just, he's listening now. And he's going, this is bullshit. So it's good though. It's good to open up because it does because then it lets some pressure off.
It does. And it's like what it's allowed me to do is look at my voice as a stand-up.
Mm.
And it's like I had a similar approach with stand-up. So it's like I'd give, an element of my truth, but I'd make sure it was so distanced from me that should it not go the way I want it to go, it's nothing to do with me. It's just material. Whereas now it's like I feel comfortable enough to just literally be my authentic self on stage. Yeah. So it's like with this new show I'm writing, I'm like, I'm so excited to just get this out there because I'm like, I feel like this is the first, I feel like I've gone back to the beginning again.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? It feels like I'm starting again because I'm like, bro, this is actually really transparent nakedness on stage.
It's weird, isn't it? It's
weird.
Yeah. I know when I've done it and people, I've been described as being, not painfully honest, but something like, they were like, I can't believe you say the things you say. And you go, that's who I am. And at least then, if anything ever happens, no one's got anything on me. They can't go, this? I go, no, I talked about that 2 years ago.
And it's the most freedom that you can experience in life.
Ain't got nothing on me. Yeah.
That's it. You can't hold nothing over me. I am who I am.
But I tell you, with your daughter and that, they will figure it out. They'll come to a point. There'll be this moment in your life.
Yeah.
And you'll hear them say something and you'll go, okay. And that's when you've done a good job.
It's funny because it's like, it's little things that kids reveal that make you think, oh shit, you're actually listening to me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I heard my daughter, so I went to visit a secondary school with my daughter and her mum was with her, we're all there together. And she was talking to her mum and I was just listening to the conversation. And I think her mum mentioned something about, oh, being a psychologist, you can make a lot of money. And she was like, oh, yeah, but I don't know if I like it that much. And she's like, well, you know, liking it is cool, but, you know, there's a lot of money to be made. And she was like, yeah, but I want to be happy. I want to be happy doing whatever it is I do every day. And I was just in the back listening like, that's exactly what we say in the car. I was so proud.
Yeah. Oh, you get it. You get it.
Yeah. She used to say to me, she's like, oh, Dad, what do you do for work? And I'm like, well, I tell jokes and I make people laugh. Yeah. And she's like, but you get in trouble for doing that at school. And I was like, well, yeah, you do. I get paid for it.
Yeah, don't worry. Yeah, stick at it, kid.
Keep it going.
But that's it, though. But that's the thing, isn't it? And about conforming.
Yeah.
Now, I'm having some counselling, and there's a form that you have to fill out before every session, and it just says how you're feeling, where you're at. Like, and it's all like, you know, is there like, you know, from like, would you, do you feel like you do something to yourself? Like, do you feel like every day, blah, 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 and you have to fill this out. And then there's a couple of weeks, I didn't fill it out. And the counsel was like, what? He goes, you didn't fill the form out. And I said, because the form doesn't really tell you where I'm at. It's too, I'd like, yeah, sometimes I feel like I want to do myself in, but then it goes away and it might come back. And I'm like, he goes, yeah. And then he explained to me the reason of the form and it made sense.
Right. Okay.
And it's all about, and then you talk about, you know, conforming and then like we say about, you know, your daughter saying like, oh yeah, at school, you're not allowed to make fun and tell jokes and things like that. You get told off.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's none, we all feel like we don't fit in and everyone feels, oh, I need to do more. And then I'll feel like I'm in it, but we shouldn't, we don't have to fit in. It's fucked. Don't fit into that. You end up filling a carry bag full of petrol because the news said it was going to fucking run out. If you try and fit in,
this is it. It's like I look at my friends and all my stuff, and I'm like, you know what? I'm glad I am the way I am.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I used to. You have that insecurity that makes you think, oh, I'm not like everybody else. Should I do a bit more of this? Do a bit more of that? Whereas now I'm like, I'm happy to take my path and go it alone. Whatever happens, let the cards fall where they may. Do you know what I mean? And you know, now I'm setting my life. I've got my family. Do you know what I mean? I've got a house. I'm good. Do you know what I mean? So if I go on stage and say something and everybody turns against me, my life is unchanged. Yeah. It's unchanged.
Yeah. I think that is it. It's you know, we only, as far as we're aware, we only get one shot at this. And so, you know, we waste a lot of time worrying about fitting in, worrying about this, that and the other, and trying to change ourselves to be this, that and the other. But all you got to do is just be decent. Just be decent to the people around you.
Yeah.
That's it. And I've learned that the hard way because, I mean, because you know, I've been a bit of a dude, but I've been an absolute wanker as well.
Yeah. So,
I'm still figuring it out.
Do you ever have those moments where you just kind of like, you step out of yourself and you're like, bro, I'm being a bit of a prick today.
I think my blood sugar's really low. I'm being a right fucking tosser today. But it's that, it's recognising that, not beating yourself up too much about that.
Yeah.
You know, make it's just, yeah, you'll figure it out. You
this
know?
Is it, man. And just trust, like, it's one of those things, it's like you can't get everything right and you can't control everything. I think control freaks, it must be quite tough being a control freak in life because it's like, there's so many elements of this life that you don't have control over.
Yeah.
It just cannot be the route to take. My girlfriend, she's a bit of a control freak at times, and I'm always the laid back one to balance her out. Yeah. I'm like, look, so what? We'll see what happens.
And that drives her mad.
Yeah, big time. She's like, oh, this needs to happen by Friday, otherwise da, da, da. And I'm like, well, we're still going to get to Saturday at the same pace.
Yeah, Saturday's still going to happen.
Yeah, it's still going to
happen. It's it. And I know people, like loved ones, that try to preempt. They were so hell-bent on being in control.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to make the future happen. Like, no, I know exactly what's going to happen at any given time. You're like, you're going to die young.
it doesn't work like that.
No, just let it happen. Do the best you can.
But you know what it is? Being a stand-up comic prepares you for that, though, because you plan your set. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to do this and it's going to happen. And that's a big joke. That always gets a great laugh. And then just one day, it doesn't get a laugh at all. Now that little pause break you had planned, fuck it. We're still in this.
Oh, shit. There's a guy called Benny Boot who used to do comedy. I don't know if you ever met him. Really lovely guy. And he like at the end of his set, he goes, the set's short tonight. He goes, because the time I allotted for laughter, you did not comply.
I love the honesty.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing worse than that feeling when it's like you come to the end of the planned set and you're like, I'm only on 17 minutes. This is a complete set as it is. Now I've got to just keep going.
This is the thing where someone says, they go, it must be good to be a comedian. You go, yeah, mostly. But then there's that one day.
Oh, man.
They just stare at you. And then you go, you do that classic comedian thing like you just said. I'm going to pull out this. I know this is good, foolproof. And you go, blam. And then he goes, nah.
Not tonight, mate.
In fact, that's the worst thing you've said yet. But then that's why I like it when you acknowledge it. People, sometimes you can win around, like Bill Burr's famously, the countdown when he was in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And when he got on back on side, but that's a rare occurrence as well. If you can come out of it and go, look, this is shit, eh? Very rarely do they go, oh yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mate. If you address it and they just cute give you that cold stare, that's when it's like, mate, time to wrap up.
But what I've said to younger comics as well is that the gaps in between the shit gigs become longer. If you're having a run where every night is, I don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah, rethink the strategy a little bit.
But it does make you a stronger person, like we said earlier.
It does. The tough gigs definitely confirm to me that I love stand-up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I've had some nights where it's like, bloody hell, I probably shouldn't really get paid for this.
I've heard that. Someone said that the other day. They went, oh, there was one night I bombed so hard I didn't take my fee. And I went, no, you should always take your fee.
Always take the fee.
Yeah.
I messed around with that. I remember one time I had this gig at Camden Centre. And it's like, first time performing in a space that big. And I'd won like a competition in a mini comedy club in North London to get the privilege to perform there. So it's like I performed and every single joke just felt flat. It was I just couldn't work out what was going on, but I had the resilience to be like, the next joke will get him on side. And I'll get to my last joke. I'm like, this is the big finish. This is the one that does it. Halfway through that joke, they started clapping me off. Like, all right, we've had enough of this. So at the end of my set, the host comes out to present me my trophy for winning the competition in that little comedy club. Oh, my gosh. I was thinking, if you're watching this, you think, who the hell did he beat to win that competition?
Oh, man. Yeah. Who? Yeah, what the fuck?
Exactly.
He was the winner. Oh, man. I remember emceeing a night, and there was a guy called Tom Rigglesworth. And there was a guy, it was a gig for, it would just be Jonglers. And they had this gig at Sway in Covent Garden, and it was called The Abattoir. Everyone died all the time. So downstairs was like, normally you'd be all right, but halfway through, the strippers next door will kick in. And then,
I know that.
Yeah. So halfway through your set, just these women go crazy. And then you're just, so you're struggling against that. And then you go upstairs and you all know that you're going to die. And so Tom had had a stinker downstairs, bless him, went upstairs, and it's happening again. And he's getting booed. He's getting shouted at. The stage manager, she's just going like, get him off. I can't get him off. I'm not getting him off. I'm the MC. He's my colleague. I'm not going up there. Go, yeah, you got to come off now. Fuck that.
He
has to come off. So anyway, so we do the thing, and then he finishes. He says, I'm not leaving until you're all booing. So everyone's booing. As we come off, he goes, I'll go back on. I went, all right. So I go, ladies and gentlemen, Tom Rigglesworth, boo. Oh, you want some more? I'll give it up for Tom Rigglesworth. He comes back on. And oh, it's funny as fuck. And then the show manager's going mental. She's like, how dare you? Like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He owned it. Young.
Could be, man. Balls of steel.
But you still love it. You're still getting out there. Yeah, you know, the last couple of years we've had, it's been a bit tricky, isn't it? You know,
it has been, man. And it's I think the time away from it has kind of just reconfirmed how much I do love it. You know what I mean? Like those Zoom gigs and these outdoor things. It was like, all right, it's not sex. It's just a quick wank. it doesn't satisfy the same way.
Yeah, it's enough, but not enough.
Yeah. I'm like, I need a packed theatre. I need that feeling, that alive energy. So I think, you know, going through all of these experiences, I'm like, right, stand-up is my main love. Mm. I've always looked at, before that, I was like, you know, it's my first love, but, you know, I'll do a bit of acting, I'll do a bit of this, do a bit of that. Yeah. But like now I'm like, okay, stand-up is the thing I really do love. Everything else, I can build a love towards that, but it's not going to be the same as stand-up. Stand-up is home. So, you know, I'm very excited. And I think with the new kind of experiences and stuff that's kind of taken place mentally, I'm like, I actually cannot wait to get on stage.
Yeah.
Cannot wait.
I remember someone was speaking, they were talking to me in one of the lockdowns, and he just said, oh, you know what it's like, Rich? We just need that attention. And I'm like, I don't need attention, but I do, what I need is the buzz I get for making a room for the people laugh.
That's right.
Sometimes it just hits, you don't even know what you're saying. It's just something else. You're just in this flow state, and it's like bam, 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 and the place is rocking, and you're just in the middle of it. And then afterwards, you come away, you go, fuck, I don't even remember what I said.
So I mean, just enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, those nights.
And it's funny, like the attention thing is funny because I don't feel like I'm an attention seeking person in my life, like in general. I'm quite reserved. I'm not really a huge user of social media. Do you know what I mean? But like you say, when you've got that gig and you're on the stage, you hear the real life laughter. There's no better drug for me than that. Do you know what I mean? It's beautiful.
This is it, yeah. And it does that. The time I'm on stage is where I'm most comfortable because I don't have to worry about what's going on outside. I don't have to worry about, you know, I'm just I'm in that bit where I'm like, I don't have to worry about bills, about kids. Yeah. All I've got to do is make these people laugh and hopefully help them forget for 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever you're doing.
That's right. But
that's it, you know.
Stand-up has been therapy for a lot of us over the years. Do you know what I mean? I've had times in my life where it's been an absolute shit show. But the minute I get on stage, it's gone. I love it. And it's funny because Dave Chappelle was here. He did, like, obviously for a recent run, but he did like a secret gig at the Backyard.
That's right,
last Monday. And I performed on the night as well.
Wow.
So like backstage, we're just there chatting. And I said to him, I said, look, what drives you at this point, man? Like everybody calls you the GOAT, you know, you're loved in every room you're in. What keeps you pushing? And he said, can you hear that laughter right there? He goes, that's it.
Fuck.
It's, yeah. It that doesn't it, wear off. It? Yeah.
That is it. It's just that hearing that, laughter, hear it on after when you come off and people are going, mate, that's all I want.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I want. Mm-hmm. And to hear, I think that's when you hear like someone like Chappelle who's on that level.
That's right.
When they just go, no, because of this.
That's
and
it.
You go, fuck, man. You know, and like you say, he's been through his trials and tribulations. He's ups and downs. And
But that keeps you going. And that's, I think that's the powerful part. And I think, like you say, you know, being able to take people away from their problems.
Yeah.
But just that little window. I think that's a gift that we walk around with. And I think we understand how powerful it is.
I think so.
Do you know what I mean? Because it helps them as it helps us. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's like doing this. Like, we know this is, like someone said to me the other day, goes, oh, yeah, your podcast isn't really mental health. I go, have you listened to it? Because it is. It's that us talking about our experiences then will help someone listening go, oh, yeah, I experienced that.
Right.
Oh, that's helpful. I don't feel alone. My own now. Yeah, alone.
Yeah, yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably one of the most comforting parts of the lockdown was no matter how bad your day got because of it, everybody you knew was also dealing with it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That kept us very united moving forward in it. So, yeah, there's something powerful in that.
I think so. And I think that, again, like you said, with the lockdowns, realised that it affected everybody the same. So, you know, I was talking to, like, people that you and I work with and people, and I was talking to, I spoke to Romesh,
Megan
Nathan, I spoke to Heston Blumenthal, and they were all in their houses, they were all locked in, and you're just going, oh shit, doesn't matter where you end up,
that's right,
pretty much fundamentally we're all the same. We are all the same, going through the same shit.
Yeah. Just some of us are in bigger houses. I saw some houses during the lockdown and I was like, bloody hell, you're having a good time.
That's your mum and dad's house, surely.
Yeah. I was like, mate. You know, you start looking at celebrities and they're just like, oh, another day at home. It's like, dude, you've been walking for 10 minutes in your garden doing this video.
I've just seen you walk past two swimming pools.
That's what I mean. It's not the same, bro. It's not the fucking same.
I know. You see Jack Black dancing around on his fucking half pipe.
Do you know what I mean? We're all in this together, guys.
Yeah. We're having to sleep in separate rooms because we hate each other.
That's what I mean.
You've got your own, you're sitting in, I don't even know what that is. Your hallway.
You're in a gaming room? Is that like a movie room in your house? I've never leave the house anyway.
Exactly. If I lived like that. I know when you, like Backstreet Boys did a video, they did a song or whatever, and they, so you saw their individual houses.
Oh, yeah, that was sick.
Fuck off. That's bigger than the estate I lived on as a kid. You know, they come swimming up from their like pool bar. You are my fire.
Oh, my days.
Yeah. Mate, this has been fucking lovely, Travis.
Oh, thanks for having me,
joy,
man.
Been a joy. Where can we find you?
So Instagram and Twitter, Travis J-E-N-T, so that's Travis J-A-Y-E-N-T. And yeah, man, that's where I'm, all my bits and all my ways are all out there.
lovely, man. And when's your next gig? When are you gigging?
Yeah, November 12th, Bloomsbury Theatre. One Night Only. You know, glad to just be taking on a night in the West End, first time in my career. So I'm very excited about that. Tickets are still available on the Bloomsbury Theatre website. So yeah, man, get yours and come down.
Yes, Travis. Well done, man. It's been an absolute pleasure. And hopefully our paths cross, man.
Yeah, definitely, bro. Right.
Nice. Yeah, nice one. Thanks, Travis, mate.
No worries, bro. Take it easy, man.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.